The Platforming Our Artists podcast series is supported by Torch as part of the Humanities Cultural Programme.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of this Chameleon Artist podcast. Obviously today we have Fran here with us. Fran is my partner in crime on Medea, on Chameleon. Hello Fran, how are you?
Hi, yeah, I'm good.
Excited to be on, I'm sure. Just to tell the audience a bit more about you. So obviously Fran and I met at Oxford, music at Oxford. Graduated in 2019 and since then has had a pretty colourful career. She left and immediately joined the music team at the National Theatre on Three Sisters and then jumped straight into working with the Almeida Young Company 2019 to 2020. And since then and during that period really worked with Talawa, incredible diverse theatre company, Utopia, and is now currently on the National Theatre Youth Rep Company. And she is cast as Othello in Othello, in their new version of Othello. That's a lot of Othellos in a sentence there, directed by Miranda Cromwell. So Fran, that's quite the career you've stacked up there.
I'm very grateful, especially now with, you know, that's going on with coronavirus out here. I'm very grateful to have still had many opportunities to be creative in this time. So yeah, we'll move.
But let's absolutely we will take ourselves a little bit back to Oxford. So we met in perhaps the most sort of extraordinary way and maybe obvious way, which is backstage on a show, up in the top two dressing rooms of the Oxford Playhouse on a, let's just say, unique production of A Little Shop of Horrors, where you were.
It was fun.
It was great fun. We had a great time. I put on a bright red lipstick when you were in a green glittery dress. But yeah, that's when we met now, 2017. So a pretty long time ago, yeah. our first year. We were very young. We were both just turned 19. But at Oxford, I mean, you certainly were, I did a lot of drama, but you did a hell of a lot of drama, obviously, president of ODS. And then you founded the Oxford BAME Drama Society. So we'd love to hear sort of a bit about that process. And just generally, you mean, what was it like studying Oxford, studying music, of course?
Yeah, so Oxford was an interesting experience, to say the least. I was the only Black person in my year in my college and also on my course. So it was quite isolating and I felt quite conflicted about a lot of things because I was very aware of the privilege that I had and still have by being in that space and having access to the teaching, the facilities and the kind of status that you get just because you've been to Oxford or Cambridge, which is incredibly problematic and is part of the reason why this country is in the state that it's in at the moment. I'm looking at you, PP, Oxbridge grad. Well, let's not get into that right now. But yeah, I chose to study music because my kind of entrance into the creative arts world was through National Youth Theatre when I joined when I was 15. And I ended up working with a guy called Tristan Parks, who was the musical director for a lot of the NYT shows that I was working on. And he introduced me to musical directing and composing for theatre. And I thought, yeah, I can see myself doing this. Let me do a course that will give me the skills to be able to make a viable career out of this long term. So I went and studied music at Oxford, which I thought would be much more of a practical course than it actually was. But in the end, I found looking into the history, psychology, philosophy behind music, I found that really interesting and it really helped me to gain a deeper understanding and love for this art form and its different iterations. So I'm grateful for that experience. But yes, theatre, music have always been something that I felt really drawn to as a way to just be myself and express myself. And so I was keen to get involved in both the theatre and music scenes whilst I was at uni. However, I found the theatre scene in particular incredibly white and incredibly closed off to the type of theatre that I liked and that I wanted to make. I didn't want to just put on A View from the Bridge for the 200th time just because I studied it at school, you know. I wanted to make theatre that was challenging and authentic, and I wanted to talk about stories that I could relate to as a young Black woman, and I was just frustrated by the staleness, really, of the whole scene.
context for people who don't know so much of the Oxford drama scene, we have about four major. It's an incredible, it's a beyond a privilege. We have funding to put on shows. There is a show or two on every week. There are four theatre spaces that you can use there. And there's a lot of work that comes out constantly, but also to put it in perspective, it does tend to come from a very sort of privileged, they tend to be either sort of classical plays or they are, you know, big spins on things that are very much overdone. And they do tend to, I was the only person of color producer there. You were obviously one of the only, until Medea, one of the only black women in theater. So it's certainly a great scene and an incredible privilege, but really stagnated and really needed a shake up, which you offered in the form of starting this incredible BAME Drama Society.
Yeah, it really just grew out of this feeling of just feeling frustrated that I wasn't able to be part of the kind of work that I wanted to make. And so in my second year, as you mentioned, yeah, I started a drama society exclusively for ethnic minority students. And we it was me and two other mates. We started it out just as a way to just meet weekly in Lyon and chat about how we could make the drama scene more diverse and more inclusive. And it just grew from there. We started a Facebook page and students were joining and chatting. And we found that actually so many students in Oxford were interested in drama, but because they weren't white and because they didn't go to Westminster and they didn't have the confidence that you kind of needed in that space to get involved, their voices were not being heard. And so we decided to facilitate that. And we built this community of over 100 students online and hosted like casual meet and greets and just created this space for students of color to come and chat and be creative without any kind of pressure to put on anything too big or to conform in any way. We just created a space to just be and just create and just to come outside of studying to collaborate. And as the society grew over time, over those first few months, we then decided to kind of like cement our status as a society in Oxford and put on a full-blown show. And no, that's when I came and called you up, Shiv.
Yeah, and then came the year. That is something that we will discuss in detail, I'm sure, in another podcast episode. But today is not focused on Medea, it's focused on you. So you did all of this, you were president of ALDS Oxford, you put on incredible shows. Random is perhaps the best, obviously barring Medea, the best student production I saw at Oxford. It was an incredible piece. And then you left Oxford and pretty quickly, I mean, remarkably quickly, you end up with Three Sisters, National Theatre, backstage on the composing team. You went from sort of zero to 100 there. And that was within, I think, 2 months of graduating, you were within that space. What was that like? What was working at the National Theatre on Three Sisters? Talk to us a little bit about that.
It was honestly incredible. I still cannot believe that I had that experience. And even the way it came about, it was just me using the connections that I'd already built up through doing National Youth Theatre and through doing music and theatre outside of uni and just having conversations with people. I think the main thing about the industry is that it is about, at the end of the day, it's about people. We're telling stories about people. And so you have to be invested in the people who you're either inspired by or collaborating with or the people who have influenced you in the art that you're making. And it just, as a result of me loving the work at the National and just making it known that I was a young creative out there, I was in a roundabout way put in touch with the music producer at the National, Terry Aldridge, and he said, come on board, we're doing Three Sisters with Inua Ellums, who I adore, Barbershop Chronicles, it's incredible. And I was assisting Michael Henry, who was the musical director on the show, and Femi, who was the composer on the show, to work on this incredible adaptation of Chekhov set in 1960s Nigeria, at the height of the Biafran War, lots of Afrobeat, high life music. It was such a joy to work on a piece that just celebrated Blackness in its authenticity. It wasn't tokenistic, it wasn't tick box, it didn't hide away from the full experience of what it means to be in the context of the show, what it meant to be a Black person and a Nigerian during a civil war in Nigeria in the 60s. And it's important to note also that this history is not so far removed from us here right now. The 60s was not long ago at all, but we don't learn about this history.
History that was very much caused by the British occupation and their arbitrary decision to control Nigeria in the way that they did. I mean, it's certainly not divorced from British colonialism at all. And yet you're right, we don't learn a thing about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And being, so my mum's family are Nigerian, being half Nigerian as well, and speaking to my grandma who lived through this war as well, who managed to come and see the show, and seeing how putting on work in such a, I mean, the National Theatre, it's like the beacon of theatre in the UK, and for that space to have hosted that story, it was huge. It was a really, really big moment for the Black community, but also for theatre as a whole, and seeing the audiences come in and reacting to the show was something really, really magical. And just knowing that I was a really small part of that, and to have had that as like my first kind of professional experience coming out of uni is mad. And it really has kind of set the foundations for the kind of work that I want to be involved with and I want to make moving forward.
On that topic, I mean, you've gone from sort of the National Theatre, now you're in the National Youth Theatre Rep Scheme, and you are in what sounds like, I mean, it's not out yet, I look forward to seeing it, but this new version of Othello. Miranda Cromwell is an incredible director, and you're working as the Othello in this sort of, this as you tell me, you know, production that's questioning systemic racism, questioning sexuality, all of these things that are sounding like what's going to make an incredible production. Obviously, you guys are currently a bit in the air with the new lockdown and restrictions, but, you know, what's going on there? Tell us what you can. I don't know what you're allowed to say about this new version of Othello, where you are very much the eponymous star.
Well, I mean, you haven't seen it yet, so I don't know how it's going to be. But so far, so good. Obviously, with the lockdown, we're now having to compromise by not being in the room at the moment. So we're rehearsing on Zoom, doing a lot of table work and script work. But yes, as you said, we're working with Miranda Cromwell, fantastic director who's done Death of a Salesman, and is just so collaborative in the way that she works. And I think that especially with a group of young, the 16 of us, 18 to 25 year olds working on this, it's so refreshing and so inspiring to be working with someone who has such an established, who is such an established artist and in her own right, but is also willing to collaborate and hear our voices and work that into the script. And we're working with an incredible dramaturge, Jiffa Benson, who has abridged the script, setting it in contemporary Britain. And yes, Othello is a queer Black woman. And we're having lots of conversations at the moment about the intersections of racism and sexuality and what it means to be queer, what it means to be Black, and what it means to be a woman in contemporary Britain, which, as you said, Shiv, is especially poignant to be thinking about now with the Black Lives Matter movement, George Floyd's murder, and in the situation we're in at the moment, all artists are now having to think about how we move forward.
Well, let's talk about that. 10 months of lockdown, no one really wants to hear about the lockdown, but in this period, in this massive global crisis, we realise we continue to be in another massive global crisis, which is the extent to which systemic racism is still not only present, but absolutely deadly for, you know, swathes of society. And I think that obviously we are across the pond and things are a bit different here. And in my opinion, we don't do enough work to focus on our own systemic racism in the UK. And we often just talk about the States. But I mean, talk to me just about, I remember talking to you, obviously, at the time we were working on, we continue to work on Madea, obviously, in this period. But how did that all feel? I mean, what was, as someone who spent so long working in diverse circles and was obviously extremely aware of these things, and we've had conversations about this for years, it's not news to us, but how did that make you feel to see it come into the public field like this, and what it means now, and what you think it means, what it should mean, and what it hopefully does mean to people looking forward in now, as we move on to the next year?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to be said on this. We could talk, and we have spoken for hours, days about this. And I think there's a lot of power in creativity, and we shouldn't take this for granted. I think we all, as people in creative spaces, have a responsibility to use the tools at our disposal to make a meaningful impact on society, especially with all that's going on at the moment with COVID-19. We've seen how it's disproportionately affected ethnic minority communities with the Black Lives Matter movement. It's clear that we still need to be having conversations to really understand where these systems of oppression originated from, and the roles that our own communities within the UK played in sustaining them. And I think it's actually a privilege to be working in the arts at this time, because so many people, so many of our key workers, NHS staff, have not had this time to reflect and to chat like we have, and to think about how to move forward from here. And so it is a privilege that we do have this space to have these conversations. And it's exciting, I think, to be witnessing a shift, to be witnessing a kind of like reckoning that people are having with themselves, with their own position in society, and their own flaws as human beings, and how we can better ourselves and educate ourselves.
Something you said there I think is really important to pick up, which is that especially within theatre, we've seen people who have had this 10 months. And first of all, I think it's worth noting that, you know, your mum's a teacher, my mum works, both my parents work in the NHS. They have not had any time off. They've worked consistently since March. They've been on the front lines in a way that so few of us have. And you're so right. We have been given this privilege of being able, as much as it's been an extremely difficult time for the industry, we have not been risking our lives to try keep society running through the virus. And that's extremely important to know. I don't think that's noted enough. I think we're a bit biased. Obviously, we have parents who have been on the front line, but still, I think it's important to know. But secondly, talking about society as a whole is a difficult thing, but specifically within the theatre, we have hopefully been seeing changes within our own circle. We are obviously trying to make change within our own circle of arts in the UK. But what do you think, as someone who is not only sort of within the theatre industry, but is quite within the heart of what's going on in London, within you've worked with people like Talawa, incredible change makers. You're working within My Tea Rep Scheme, which has got its most diverse cohort it's ever had right now, has a lot of clout across the country. What do you see changing in theatre since last summer? And what do you want to see as we move into 2021?
I think we are witnessing a shift culturally in terms of where theatre, film, TV is moving as a result of these increased discussions around the word diversity. You have people like Steve McQueen making shows like Small Axe, which are really putting into the mainstream these conversations.
It's on BBC iPlayer, go watch it.
See. Yeah, get to know. And I think the way forward in terms of theatre, it's got to start with conversation. It's got to start with conversation, but then it's got to lead to practical, tangible steps. And that's not just about having more Black and brown people on stages or more Black and brown people in front of the camera. It's about uprooting the whole system and having this changed ethos at the heart of whatever art you're making. Look at Small Axe again. It's not just Black people in front of the camera, it's Black people behind the camera. It's about having Black and brown and diverse people, creatives, in positions of power on the boards for the theatres, running the theatres, in the production teams, in the writing teams. It's about making it a movement and not just a moment. It's been tokenistic for too long. And people are dying. People are being murdered because of the systems that are in place. I've got to have conversations with my little brother about how he's going to be perceived in this world purely because of the color of his skin. And that's not cool. That's not cool. So when we have so much power as artists to shape society, with power comes a responsibility, and it's been said before, but it does. And I don't take that lightly. And I think I found myself thinking about my own role individually in the movement as a musician, as an artist, as a creative or whatever.
Writer.
And I was thinking lots about sound, especially when the protests were going on. I was thinking about the role of sound in framing these moments and these movements. Sound can mean music, thinking about the array of protest music, the Black Canon from Nina Simone to Kendrick Lamar. There are so many artists at the moment using sound to further the movement. And this is a really big source of inspiration for me. But I was also thinking about sound as noise. Like the noises we make as human beings, the sounds of nature, the sounds that we facilitate through design, and what sounds are we hearing? What sounds are we not hearing? What sounds are being silenced within these spaces that we create? So I hope to, moving forward in my work, really challenge this idea of like the sonic environment that we live in and that shapes society. And really question that what it is that I am contributing to society through my work, through my music, is something that is going to help to move society forward.
I was just going to say, thinking about this then, this is all really positive. It's incredibly interesting to think about sound. I don't know whether I'd had it framed in that way. And I think that it's the great thing about talking to different creators. So they all have such an interesting output, and the way that they work gives them such a unique outlook on how they react to these things, obviously, especially artists of color in this time. And it's one of the great privileges of doing the podcast, being able to talk to so many different people. But sort of thinking now about the structures around us, the theaters, and we in the last 4 months, 5 months, I've spoken to a lot of theaters, a lot of big theater makers. How much do you think, and I know this is the sort of question that everyone asks but no one wants to know the real answer to, which is, you know, is this, do you think, we've had this so many times, and I think one of the things that I find so almost disturbing about the current position that we're in, which is that there's this weird thing in every generation that we're for. No, it's been forged so many times before. We've had these arguments since the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, whether it be riots or whether it be the Sari protests or this, you know, this, it's happened so many times before. And as we can look to the States, I mean, Black people have been dying for a very long time there. You know, some would suggest for the whole of their history. So we're in 2021. Is this a new moment? Is this a moment, as you said, is it a moment or is it a movement? And what do you think specifically within the lens of theatre? Are you seeing the things around us changing in a way that you think is actually change? Or do you think this is just another reactive, they know they need to do this to get the funding, they know they need to do this to make sure that they're pub. I mean, as a producer, I can tell you the amount of funding things that you know you have to throw in a bit of diversity because you know it gets you that extra 5K, that extra 10K. And obviously all of these things are tokenistic, and there's a whole different conversation about the value of tokenism that we're not going to get into now, but are we seeing a movement or are we seeing a moment, in your opinion, as you're sort of on the ground working through these things?
Yeah, I've got to stay positive, and I do feel like there is a shift that's going on at the moment as a result of the Black Lives Matter protests that were happening over summer last year. I do feel like it feels different. I am having a lot more conversations with my white friends who genuinely want to try to understand. And I think that is the start of change. It's like, we can say, oh, there's a problem, but we need to first recognize that the problem is with each and is with us individually, and recognize that we have power in either perpetuating that problem or trying to solve it. And I do think that more people this time, because we were all locked at home, we were all online, we were all seeing events unfold. There was no distraction. There was no excuse. I'm working bare hours or whatever. We were all confronted with this thing. And I do think that it has deeply moved a lot more people than previous protests have. And I think it takes time. I mean, Shiv, the amount of conversations we had about whether the work that we were doing at Oxford was going to go anywhere, because, you know, that place is built on years and years and years of systemic racism, and it operates on that. These things, for it to become deep-rooted, takes time. But I do feel like there's something different about the way that things are moving now. And that's not to say that change is going to come next year, 2 years from now. It's going to take, I feel really positive about our generation. I feel like there are a lot of incredible young people at the moment who are, within whatever field they're working in, really pushing for change. And I'm so excited to see where that's going to lead 5 to 10 years from now. So I think it's we've just got to stay positive, and we've got to keep moving, keep pushing, because it doesn't come overnight. But I do feel that this time is different. And I feel like, thinking about the future of theatre, we're having to think about ways of adapting and changing to make theatre more accessible. Because of this virus, we're having to think of new ways of making art that has the same effect as live theatre, but is safe and is accessible to everyone, thinking about like technology and expanding in those areas. So I do think that we are just having, our minds are becoming more malleable, and we are willing to have more conversations now.
I think that what you point out with the coronavirus is that not only could no one avoid it, but the whole of society has been in this flux of change for so long now. For 10 months, everyone has been lost as to what on earth to do. Mm. But I feel that the movement came at such a time where not only was it unavoidable, but everyone was questioning all systems, all movements, everything was changing, no one was working in the same way. And then suddenly I think that these young creatives, some of whom we are young creatives, we're working with so many incredible young creatives, you'll hear many more on this podcast, is that we've all sort of realized that we don't have to structure ourselves within the way that we thought. We can rehearse online, we can create virtually. I'm not saying that we want to, but I'm saying that what we've realized is that I think everyone has realized they're a lot more adaptable than we think. And then suddenly all of these lazy conversations, even we had in Oxford about, oh, we're not against it, but you know, it's a big change. Suddenly that doesn't count, because what has been a bigger change than the coronavirus to literally every person's life? I think globally, no one has been, not a single soul on the earth has not been affected somehow by this virus. And I think that's such an incredible thing. And hopefully that will facilitate more conversations about change. But also, we are here at Chameleon, here with Medea, obviously making that change. And to sort of finish off as we come to the end of this podcast, why don't you say a little bit about, you know, what you think we're doing and why what we're doing sort of fits into what you just described as the change that we need to make.
Yeah, I think for me, the reason why I love what I do in music, in theatre, is because of the collaborative spirit that is at the heart of it. And I feel we need to come together as creatives, as specifically creatives of colour. We need to support each other and celebrate ourselves as a community of peoples in order to move forward. And I think with Chameleon, I'm so excited to be facilitating this space where it is a space of cultural celebration and finding strength in what makes us different. And I think that's at the heart of Medea and what we're trying to do. And I'm excited to be working with all these sick artists who you're getting to chat to, because it is a real privilege.
And you're one of them. And so how great it is to be your partner in all this, how great it is to do it all together. And thank you so much for doing our first podcast here at Chameleon. This is our inaugural podcast, and what will be quite a few, I think, with these amazing artists to discuss this topic and to discuss the changes. But hopefully, now that I've interviewed you and talked to you to death, anyone listening has sort of learned a bit more about us and more importantly, learned about you and what you do. And obviously, thank you so much for doing this for us.
It's my pleasure.